Welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So make yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. Love the quick profit, the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love the Lord. Love the world. Work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all that you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, and you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that profit. Prophesy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Go with your love to the fields. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head in her lap. Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. And as soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Speaking with Joy. That was The Mad Farmers' Liberation Front by Wendell Berry and the topic of today's episode. But first, I want to welcome you back. I am glad to be back after taking a week break because I was submitting my chapter for my PhD and also submitting the manuscript for Girls Club, which I will tell you more about soon, but is the project I've been working on with my mother and sister on the power of women's friendships. So I was very busy last week, and I have just been taking the loveliest few days off, and so I'm really excited to be able to come back and talk with you all this week. Now this week's theme, if I could give it a one sentence summary, would be that we ought to treat life as a mystery and a miracle, and not as a problem to be solved. And to be addressing this idea, we're going to be looking to this poem by Wendell Berry. Now, I think it is helpful if I give you a little bit of the background on who Wendell Berry is as a person before we kind of talk about what this poem means. Now, Wendell Berry is one of my favorite authors. He is famous for writing many things. He's a prolific writer, perhaps most famously for writing a series of novels that are all based around this kind of fictionalized town in Kentucky called Port Royal. And he chronicles kind of the imagined, but based on some of the experiences in his own life, changes of this Kentucky kind of farming community and the way that it changes over from World War II to all the technology that comes in and the ways that, that changes the land and the farming and the communities. Now, this connects to the fact that Berry also is something of an activist. He has spent his whole life trying to kind of preserve the land and help the communities of Kentucky. He is, as I said, a native Kentuckian, and this is a place that he's devoted his whole life to caring for. So when you look at his kind of biography of his life, he had kind of a successful career. He had done some writing. He lived in San Francisco. And then even after having all of that, he returned to his small kind of rural home in Kentucky because he was so passionate about trying to preserve the home and the communities that he felt like were falling apart. So he devoted his life to kind of advocating for them first through these novels that he put out, but he's also a poet, as we listen to today's poem. And he also has written a million amazing essays. And Barry, what I love about him is he is righteously and prophetically grumpy. And one of the best examples of this that I think will help lead us into our conversation today is the book Life is a Miracle, An Essay Against Modern Superstition. Now, in this book, which I very much recommend that you get, he spends the first half of it kind of getting against E.O. Wilson, who wrote this book called Consilience, where he talks about how we really just have to start thinking about the arts and humanities. We need to smash them together and look at them with the same methodology. And Barry's response to that is that it's a really bad idea, because he says that when he does that, Wilson is starting to treat the world like it is a problem to be solved, like it is something that is ultimately understandable. And Barry says that when we do that, we always end up exploiting and actually not treating the world as it's meant to be. And he gives examples of this both from a personal and kind of philosophical sense about how we live our lives, but also even down to the very, very practical of when we treat the earth, when we treat land, you know, yesterday was Earth Day, when we treat land as though it is a machine to be extracted worth and wealth and productivity from, we actually end up exploiting it and then making it unable to be productive. So he kind of argues for seeing the world instead of seeing it as a machine. He says we ought to encounter it as a miracle. And that will engage with today's poem. But first, I want to read you this section from Barry. So this is in A Life is a Miracle, and it's a section where he's talking about what happens when we begin to treat the world like a machine rather than a miracle. He says, "A little harder to compass is the danger that we can give up on life also by presuming that we understand it. That is, by reducing it to the terms of our understanding and by treating it as predictable and mechanical. The most radical influence of reductive science has been to virtually universal adoption of the idea that the world, its creatures and all its parts of its creatures, are machines, that there is no difference between creature and artifice, birth and manufacture, thought and computation. Our language, wherever it is used, is now almost invariably conditioned by the assumption that fleshly bodies are machines full of mechanisms fully compatible with the mechanisms of medicine, industry, commerce, and the minds, and that minds are computers fully compatible with electronic technology. This may have begun as a metaphor, but the language, as it is used, and as it affects industrial practice, it has evolved from metaphor through equation to identification. I have read Werner Heisenberg's principle that whenever one treats a living organism as a physiochemical system, they must necessarily behave as such. I'm not competent to have an opinion about the truth of that, but I do feel able to say that whenever one treats living organisms as machines, they must necessarily be perceived to behave as machines. And I can see the proposition is reversible. Whenever one perceives living organisms as machines, they must necessarily be treated as such. For quite a while, it has been possible for a free and thoughtful person to treat life as mechanical or predictable, or understandable is to reduce it. Now, almost suddenly, it is becoming clear that to reduce life to the scope of our understanding, whatever, quote, model we use, is inevitably to enslave it, to make property of it, and to put it up for sale. This is to give up on life, to carry it beyond change and redemption, and to increase the proximity of despair." So Barry goes on to describe how treating the world like it's a machine, like we are all things that can be reduced to the ways that we kind of work, leads to this sense of despair, not only in a psychological sense, but also in how we treat the world. So what is the alternate to this? How can we treat ourselves and our own personal worlds, and also our earth, also our societal issues, as something other than machines, but as mysteries that we can kind of encounter and treat with dignity and honor, and therefore approach in a different way? So I think the answer to this is Barry's poem. And what I love about this is that it's a manifesto. And a manifesto is something where you declare your way of seeing the world. And not only your way of seeing the world, but your way of acting in it. And to me, this manifesto, this poem, is something that I would love to recite to myself every morning. Because what it is ultimately saying is we must reject the way of seeing the world where people and issues of the world are problems to be solved, and instead see them as mysteries to be encountered, and live our lives that way. And I think a really good thing that Barry points out is that when we think the world is a machine that we can understand, and then we see that this machine that we can understand is doing very poorly, as I feel like most of us when we look at society, then we are so easily given in to despair. So to me, what Barry's poem is all about is about saying that is the wrong way to see the world. Problems are things that we can solve, but the world is not full of just problems, it's full of mysteries. And I think that actually does very practically kind of shape how we respond to the problems of the world. And Barry's very good at that. The suggestions that he gives about how to take care of land and how to shape communities, they're not kind of sentimental ideas. They're things that are really helpful and that I think would really change the world. And he comes to those by approaching things as this kind of holistic, organic thing. So what I wanted to do today was to take out kind of three, and then 3.5, I would say, suggestions out of this poem to think about how we could change our view of the world from something that we can understand, that we should be able to control, for the machine that leads us to despair and to cynicism, to treating it as something that is a mystery to encounter. And to me, the phrase that really catches that is in this poem. So, you know, the first part of it comes down to this, it's kind of describing the way that that he says that we see the world as a machine. When he talks about the quick profit, it's everything is being judged as valuable by the amount of money you can make and how efficient it is and all those things. So he describes that. And then he breaks it where he says, so friends, every day do something that won't compute. And to me, that is, that's kind of the crux of Barry's message. And the reason it's so important that he says do something that won't compute is that he's saying your life is not a computer that has a perfect little algorithm that comes out. Do something that won't compute, because to do something that won't compute is to be human. To be human is not to be a machine, is not to be predictable. So live into the strange mystery of being a human by doing something that won't compute. And so I kind of pulled out three ways that we do that, I think, from this poem, with ideas about how we could incorporate that in our lives. So the first one is that we need to purposely make ourselves encounter mystery. And I think that he describes this beautifully with kind of the section where he says, ask the questions that have no answers. And he goes on and talks about kind of the irreducibility of life. And I think that this reminds us that our life is not a series of problems to be solved, but mysteries to be embraced. So to embrace that reality, which I think just is true, we can't with our little brains ever reduce reality to a series of problems. Some ideas of how to do that practically are make yourself come in contact with the reality that life is bigger than you can imagine. Make yourself come into contact with mystery. Something that's funny about being in academics is that sometimes everybody gets stuck in their little worlds and we all see the world in this particular way, and it can become very kind of tiresome. But I remember one of my friends recently saying to me, you know, don't you think we would all write better philosophy if we took a hike every once in a while and realized how small we are? And there's something about contextualizing our life in mystery and in kind of the irreducibility of the world that helps us get out of that computation mindset and into that mystery mindset. So go on a hike to a beautiful place, listen to a breathtaking piece of music. I'm going to attach some in my blog for the show notes for this, but something like the New World Symphony or Lacrimosa or the Fatherland. I'll attach all those, but something that reminds you of the grandeur and the mystery and the beauty of life. Go read a little bit about physics. I know this is a funny example, but I realized when I took some time to read a little bit about physics, which honestly most of it went over my head, and a book like The Fabric of the Cosmos by Brian Greene, it made me have this kind of awe and wonder at the world. And so go do that. The second thing that I think Barry talks about is to invest in something that will live longer than you. One of the things about imagining that we live in a world that is a machine is that we kind of treat it like a You know, a, what's the word I want? What are the things that are in hallways where they dispense Snicker bars? A vending machine. We treat the world like a vending machine where we just get things out of it and we put things in, not thinking about the imprint that we'll leave behind. But he spends this whole long time saying, say the main crop is the forest that you didn't plant. And he talks about the kind of the idea of living something that will live beyond you, investing your life in something that will live beyond you. And I think about that all the time, living in St. Andrews, where, which is this really old place where there's so much history. And St. Andrews is a place where there's good and bad history. There's scars. You know, when you look around, you see the Reformation, and there's these martyrs on both sides, and you see the scars that some people left behind beyond their death, you know, that for them, something that lives beyond them is this kind of disunity and this difficulty. But you also see lives that were incredibly... they were incredibly life-changing, you know, that left something behind them that was life-giving to many people beyond them, whether that is the construction of the beautiful buildings where we still study in the library, or whether that is, you know, there's a fellow named John Honey who saved 17 people and by swimming out and saving them, and every year we celebrate his life. So do something that lives beyond you, which is reckoning with the fact that you will die. And that's another thing about machines. Machines, we think, kind of have this idea that they won't ever die. But we have to remember that living as a human means that we have a limited amount of time, that we only have so much time to invest our lives. So do that. And I think that a good way to reorient how you think about that is to ask yourself the question he asks himself, which is, who am I living to satisfy? Who is the audience for my life? So, you know, and his, I love this line where he says, so long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? And to me, that's such a wonderful question. Ask yourself, will this satisfy? And to me, I want to say, ask yourself, who are you satisfying with the way you live your life? Is it a CEO whose life is about money and power, you want to impress and get to a certain point of having enough, even though it may never be enough? Is it social media? Are you wanting to get accolades and likes from people that don't really know you and can't really relate to you? Or is it your children, your spouse? Maybe you're trying to satisfy a parent who will never be satisfied. I think something that is really good, and something that I kind of want to do this week, even for me, is to think about who you want to satisfy and to ponder what it would be to live like you wanted to satisfy them. And that sounds very simple, but then also to think about, who are you living to satisfy? And if it's not the person you want to live to satisfy, how can you change that? The third thing that I think he asks of us in this poem is to purposely do something that brings you delight. I love this section where he says, expect the end of the world, laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. And I think one of the great sicknesses of our world is cynicism, that we kind of look around and we feel like there's no hope. And I think that's something that comes with treating the world like a machine, because once we think you've understand it, there is no possibility for redemption. So what he asks of us is, don't be cynical. Don't, with all of your heart, fight to not give in to the idea that the world's a machine that has broken that you can never fix. Don't give in to that idea. And part of the way you purposely fight against that is by doing things that really bring you delight. So my ideas for this are to play with a child. I think it is excellent for one's mental health to have a niece. I get pictures every day of Lillian, and there's something so absolutely delightful about her and this innocence that kind of makes you not be able to be cynical, both because there is no cynicism in her little young face, but also because you go, I don't have the luxury to be cynical because I need to make a better world for this little one. So play with a child. That'll bring you delight and make you not lose hope. Watch a beautiful movie or read a beautiful book. And honestly, this part of it, you know, to purposely do things that bring you delight, so that you won't give in to cynicism in the world, is a whole part of the reason that I do this podcast. So I hope that I am able to bring you those beautiful books and movies and things that can, you know, bring that to you. Another thing I always find is cooking. Cooking is a pure delight to me, and it reminds me that even if the rest of the world is falling apart, I can make an excellent, I can make an excellent macaroni and cheese or shepherd's pie, or my favorite actually is baking. It's funny because I love baking more than I love eating baking, but there's this kind of sense of the rest of the world may be out of control, but I can do this beautiful, small, good thing, and I can share with others, which is always something that brings you delight. I also love gardening, and this kind of connects to the last thing. I just picked a bouquet of flowers that I put on my kitchen table from my back garden, and I was thinking about how somebody else planted that garden. I just moved in here last year. And so they, you know, and it has that line where it says to make your profit the thing that you won't harvest in your lifetime. And I was thinking, I was really thankful for someone else planting something that I am getting the profit off of. And it made me want to live my life in such a way that I will live my life beyond myself, that whatever I plant will give people life and love beyond just my daily life. And whether that is, you know, planting a garden that somebody else will pick flowers from, like I got to, or doing something that helps my community, or starting something that when I leave, that the community will be able to keep on doing it, or teaching something, someone something. I've been thinking lately about how much people who have taught me, how even if I'm, you know, thousands of miles away and don't speak to them, the things that they've taught me kind of carry with me, and in that they live beyond themselves. Or even just giving someone life-giving words. That's something, that's a prophet that we should care about. That's a prophetic prophecy. That's something that is a main crop, the forest that you did not plant and that you will not live to harvest. So those are three kind of ideas. And then the first is to purposely make yourself encounter mysteries. You'll be reminded that the world is beyond what you can control. The second is to invest in something that will live longer than you, and to ask yourself, who am I living to satisfy? The third is to purposely do something that brings you delight, to reject the world's greatest illness of cynicism, and to know that you don't have the luxury to be hopeless because there are other people who need you to make the world a better place. But the final thing, and this is kind of my ending thought, is that wonderfully mysterious way that he ends the poem. He says, practice resurrection. Now, I remember giving this to one of my friends last year, she was one of my friends and she studied environmental science. And she was just this wonderful person. She planted a garden, actually. I thought of her recently. And when she left, the garden went on and people kept on picking flowers from it, picking food from it. And I thought, what a beautiful example of legacy. But that's an aside. But I gave her this poem, and she said a few days later, she said, you know, I really liked it, but what does it mean to practice resurrection? And I thought about that because I don't think that it's an easy question to answer. But I think that at the heart of it, it kind of comes down to saying that if you are a person of faith, and particularly a person who believes in the story of Christianity, of a Christ who died and rose again and is the first fruit of the resurrection, then no sorrow, no defeat, no temporary destructive event is final. There is a working backwards that will always be done, and you have to live your life in light of that. And that means living your life knowing that even if suffering comes, and even if things seem hopeless, at the heart of it, there will be a resurrection. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately with spring here. It has been the wettest and coldest, literally the wettest and coldest winter in 30 years in Scotland. And it just keeps on seeming like spring would never come. But it does come. And I think that living in our world is like living in the longest and wettest winter in Scotland, which is that it seems like spring really never will come. But practicing resurrection is knowing that it will, and not giving up hope, and learning to encounter mystery and foster joy in your life and live for something beyond you, because you do believe in that seed of hope of practicing resurrection. So that is my admonition to you all this week. I think that I am going to start trying to memorize this poem. I've loved it for a long time. And so I would maybe encourage you to do the same if that is something you'd be interested in. I'm looking very forward to talking to you all again next week. And just a reminder, it's always helpful if you leave a review and rate this on iTunes. And I also want you all to know that I've been receiving a lot of emails lately, and I always love getting your emails and your thoughts, and it really means a lot to me. And I always pray for you all and try to answer as I can. So I wish you all an absolutely beautiful week, and I remind you to to practice resurrection, to laugh because laughter is immeasurable, and to live in your life like life is a mystery and not a machine. Talk to you all soon.